take time to produce, even Hubble took time to produce. And so the chapter in the book is about the extent to which London's housing market has survived as measured by the traditional ways, what's happened to investment, what's happened to prices, etc. And the story is, I think, one which is relatively positive, if what you want is the system to remain roughly as it is at the present time. Within an environment where housing starts were more than halving, where house prices fell on average something between 12 and 17% across the country, depending upon which version you take. And there was transactions fell, net lending fell, etc., etc. London was marginally more volatile than the rest of the country, but only marginally more. And another, we haven't had such a deep cycle for a long while, but in other cycles, London has been much more volatile, and this time, more volatile, but not that much more volatile, and adjusting more quickly and picking up more quickly than in other parts of the country. Of course, the big definition of picking up is exactly opposite of what Michael wanted to be, which is that house prices would come back to within 4% of the maximum top, which is a major problem for affordability and a major problem for how the city should operate. One of the reasons why London did well was that London was very fleet of foot when it came to the stimulus package. London had more housing ready to go than the rest of the country and got a disproportionate amount of the funding, even as compared to what it had been getting before. So, to a significant extent, the reason why London looks not too bad on the usual figures is about government putting money in. This is why I raise the issue of how long it takes to come out, because this was written in July, after the emergency budget, but before the CSR. And, of course, the big changes in the announcements in the CSR mean that there will be very, very much less money available across the country, not necessarily relatively to London. I suspect London will continue to do relatively well, because there's very much less. It's not going to make an awful lot of difference. But the biggest changes are really not part of the CSR, they're part of the government's approach to changing the way that housing is paid for by the consumer and shifting subsidies from supply side subsidies and rent subsidies to demand side subsidies, and then cutting the demand side subsidies. So you shift the subsidy by saying that social rents for new lets will be a maximum of 80% of market, which is roughly, as they're now about 50% of the market in London, is a really major increase. And will mean that larger numbers of people are on housing benefit. Larger numbers of people will be on housing benefit while working and will remain on housing benefit with quite high incomes, which is the exact opposite of much of the rhetoric from the government about what they're trying to do in that context. But the social sector issue is one which will work through very slowly. Work through slowly because we're not going to be building very many homes for a while, and people don't move much because it's really very, very difficult to move. So the number of dwellings which will be coming through at this what's called intermediate rent is going to be quite small to begin with, but over time will be an enormous change. But the thing which has made all the fuss, all the press over the last few weeks, actually was announced in July, with all the detail in July, and suddenly, for some reason or another, all the detail suddenly hit people in October. the local housing allowance, which is the housing benefit for the private rented sector, will be modified. The form of it will be modified very significantly. All of the discussion has been about caps, and particularly about the four-bedroom cap, because that obviously helps families more than others. It's been one-third of private sector, private rented tenants are on housing benefit. And another half of that again could claim it. And that is the reflection, Michael was saying, of the poor standards of income in London and the extent of really poor wages. That over 30% of Londoners who are getting housing benefit, or you know, rather getting London houses, don't have the amount, are actually working. They're not non-working households. They're working households whose rents are high in comparison to their incomes. Now, as I say, all the fuss has been about the caps, and the caps are very fundamentally a London issue. 85% of those who will be affected by the rent caps are Londoners. So it's really not an issue in the rest of the country because the proportions are so small. But the overall numbers are also quite small, certainly much less than would have appeared from the way that the papers have been dealing with it. There's something like 1,000 households affected by the four-bedroom cap. There are a lot more affected by the fact that you're now no longer allowed to have five bedrooms, or at least if you have five bedrooms, you've got to pay for it yourself. But it's the two-bedroom cap and the one-bedroom cap which have the big numbers in it. These are rent caps for people, small families or individuals. And the average impact of that for people in four-bedroom units is an average of £135 a week, which is a lot of money. And while the numbers are very small, it's very difficult to see how people are going to adjust that sort of change. And if you take them overall, it's about £81 a week, all the caps. But in total, 17,000 households, which doesn't sort of, on the big scene, is tiny. Less than 4% of the four bedrooms, it's less than 1% of most of the other categories. Over time, the big changes the changes which affect more people, which will push more people into poverty, are the reduction from 50% to 30%, which means that people can now only get a rent for the bottom third of the market or the bottom 30% of the market. In some parts of the number we're talking about, far more than 30% of people are on housing benefits, and therefore, by definition, there's going to be either movement out or there's going to be people who are having to find this money themselves. And this works out an average of £22 a week in London, all the other things plus the caps together for those who are affected. And £22 a week is a lot of money for people who are on benefits, and it will push across the country, we haven't done the figures for London will push 85,000 households into real poverty of less than £100 a week residual income. Now, of course, that means that is on the assumption it's going to work like that. And of course, the government, I don't know whether anybody heard it last night, whether it was, I didn't actually hear who it was doing it, was talking about the government being a monopsony buyer. They buy 40% of the housing, why can't they push the rents down? But they're only asking, on average, to push the rents down by 10%. That is not going to take enough demand out of the system on average to push the rents down. So it's a massive redistribution away from the people who are getting benefits to those who are rest of the system. And again, this is going to be particularly hard on London. We have drawn maps, but we haven't put them on the screen. The maps show that were it to be the case that people moved, then they would in fact move out, obviously. They would move to Portuguese, some of them would come to you. But most of the big residential areas on the margins of the city still technically remain affordable if you pull 100 weeks.